Well, joining us now, two very eloquent women from different ends of the Commonwealth. Carol Angia is from Kenya. She is a senior official with the organisation ActionAid. Carol's worked across Asia and Africa. And Rachel Blaney. Rachel is a member of the Canadian Parliament. She represents an area in British Columbia for the New Democratic Party. Welcome to the program.
It's good to be here.
Carol, given that you've worked extensively across Africa, do you see Commonwealth nations modelling proper human rights?
I do see that. One, because there's a Commonwealth Charter that clearly articulates areas that they would like to see closer collaboration amongst nations. Say, for example, you know, recognition that there are smaller member states that need support, recognitions of, you know, the vulnerable populations within certain states, the whole question around gender equality and so forth. But I just want to say that from that charter, there's still a lot to be done. There is a real concern from women's rights community that Australia wants to become a major exporter of arms, which goes against its commitments to women, peace and security. Australia is putting profit before the people and before the protection of women's rights. No conflict has ever been good for women. We see militarism increasing in Commonwealth states, and we are saying that it is critical to end the militarism, and Australia can play a lead role in doing that. The whole question around promoting the arms trade is that you're increasing rights violations for women. You're increasing the poverty. You're doing a contradictory thing. So we would like to see Australia playing more critical role in terms of forging peace and facilitating women's rights on peace and security and not otherwise.
Rachel, one of the things that occurred to me when I first visited Ottawa, for example, was that Canada's one of the few countries where I've seen, alongside the very appropriate memorials to fallen soldiers, memorials to fallen peacekeepers, but also aid workers. As a leading Commonwealth country, does it trouble you, coming from Canada, to hear the way that Carol has spoken about Australia wanting to get into the arms business?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is distressing, and the reality is Canada is there too. Right now, selling armored vehicles to Saudi Arabia, where we know the human rights violations, the violations against women are tremendous. So absolutely, I think that's something that we should all be talking about. When we look at the realities of women on the ground, we have to look at our countries and make sure that they're being accountable to those realities. Mm-hmm. And making sure that, you know, if we have a focus on peace, if this is something that we're committed to, human rights and peace as our countries and as the Commonwealth, we need to step up and make sure that those things are actual priorities. And making money from those kind of things can be very worrisome.
You spoke earlier this morning about Commonwealth countries needing to hold each other accountable. And it did jar with me a little bit as someone who's always looked at Canada in many ways as a model democracy. You say that Canada itself needs to be held accountable, particularly in the area of Indigenous rights. How?
Well, you know, the history of Indigenous rights across our country is still something in much disarray. A lot of Indigenous communities are coming forward. They're asking for more fulfillment of the promises that were made to them. You know, we have many communities across Canada that are Indigenous communities that do not have clean drinking water. That's appalling in one of the wealthiest countries in the world. Right now, if you look at some of the concerns around pipelines in our areas where Indigenous people have said, we do not give consent, we were not consulted in this process, and we demand that we are, because this is a commitment that the government has made, and the government is saying, too bad, we have to move forward. So, you know, there's a lot of missing and murdered Indigenous women. We have over 1,200 women and girls, Indigenous women and girls, that have gone missing or have been murdered, and a lot of those cases, we don't know where they went, we don't know who murdered them, and so there's an inquiry that's happening right now, but so many holes are not being filled, and we're not being able to have, the inquiry is not having the capacity to actually have discussions about how we're going to move forward and how are we going to prevent this in the long term. So, you know, again, it's about making sure that reconciliation is a top priority, that we're looking at Indigenous communities, that we're starting to see countries where we have that history of colonialism, that there's some sort of restoration. And that's not just about money. That's about creating a pathway forward where Indigenous people are a meaningful part of that discussion. Mm-hmm.
Carol, hearing Rachel talk there from the perspective of a member of the Canadian Parliament, very concerned about some aspects of her own country's performance when it comes to the human rights of Indigenous women, that must register with you strongly because you do a lot of work with African women who have been victims of sexual violence. Mm-hmm. What's the responsibility of the Commonwealth here to help stem that crisis?
One of the things that we say as ActionAid is that every member state should be held accountable in terms of working with the other member states who are in crisis to be able to put an end to violence. It's not easy, but through international advocacy and pressure, non-violent mechanisms of ending war, that this can happen. That when the UN security resolutions were passed, say UN Security Resolution 1820 that recognizes sexual violence as a weapon of war, and the further related resolutions that call for ending impunity and greater accountability by member states to be able to ensure that sexual violence is not taking place, the Commonwealth has a responsibility of calling its member states to account. And if that's what it takes to drop you out of the Commonwealth of Nations, that should be it. Yes. One of the things that I said earlier in my presentation, that it's often assumed that all member states are well prepared to implement the resolutions. And if you ask me from where I sit and working with very local women from the community, they do not understand what those resolutions are. They don't know whether those are number plates of cars. They don't know whether those are for them. Nobody consults them. And because the system, the government systems, are not prepared to deal with those resolutions. And therefore, the advantage members of the Commonwealth, one of the great things that they would do is to work with those smaller states and governments to generate working mechanisms, structures, and facilitate women, peace, and security to actually be implemented.
There's one issue that you raised, Carol, that struck me as being very relevant to both the work that you're doing in Africa, but also the work that Rachel's doing in Canada. You said that there's a growing conflict in Africa about women's access to land, because women are often farmers as well. Mm. People forget that. In Canada, just as in Australia, there's been a very strong struggle to get Indigenous access to land. Where do you see this conflict occurring with women and land in Africa?
I think one of the areas that where there's potential future conflict is where there has been already existing conflict and people are assuming people have recovered. Why am I saying this? In places like northern Uganda, in places like South Sudan right now, in places like some parts of Kenya and in the DRC, there are women who were raped. They gave birth to children born out of rape. Children who, according to their communities, have no identity with those communities and have never been accepted. Some of them are sons. And in Africa, most land is allocated to the boy child. Mm. And these children are going to grow up and demand where to build their houses and to grow their crop and to raise their family. And when they will be told by their communities that you don't belong here, we don't know where you come from, that's where there's a potential problem. So when we did a research looking at the efficacy of transitional justice for women, one of the issues that came out from that research in northern Uganda specifically was where is the land going to be? And these children you're seeing here could be a potential source of future conflict in our context.
Rachel, in Canada, why is women's access to land, especially Aboriginal women's access to land, so important? It's worth mentioning, while you yourself are not Canadian Aboriginal, you grew up in an Aboriginal family, so this is something that's very personal to you as well. Why is land so important to Indigenous women in Canada?
Well, it's absolutely important, and it's also important in the context of having appropriate housing. And across Canada, too many Indigenous communities are very isolated. I think of one community in my riding, Kingcombe, where the river is changing because of climate change. And so every year, the community is having to find ways to build their houses up higher and higher because of the flooding that wasn't traditionally in that area. And so when you look at the women in those communities, having a safe home that they can raise their children, making sure that they have somewhere safe to be, especially when we look at the history of missing and murdered Indigenous Indigenous women and girls. So many of those women that were lost because they had challenges with housing. And so they were often transient and in serious poverty and major concern, and in some of the most remote communities. And so, you know, the other thing that's a big issue for a lot of those Indigenous communities that are remote is access to transportation. So when we look at making sure that people and women are a priority, making sure that they have somewhere safe to live so that they can look after themselves, look after their families is key, but also making sure that they have safe transportation to get to things like health appointments. You know, if you're living in a very remote community, we have to look at how we provide access, and that's definitely a challenge in our country.
Just finally, Carol, you made a very interesting observation, and you've been dealing with these issues for many years. You've been looking at leaders, both government and civil society leaders in Africa, signing agreements, peace agreements, economic agreements. Mm. You said they sign them because of a certain political correctness. Does this mean these men are what, signing them because they want to be seen to be doing the right thing rather than actually connecting with the needs of people in their own countries?
Not exactly that, but yes, they know that to some extent it's important to sign this agreement. For example, the Africa Free Trade Area Agreement that was signed the other day in Rwanda, it's a good initiative. We don't deny that. That will improve the economic status of communities in Africa. My question and my worry was, when they were signing these agreements, we need to recognize the gender dynamics, and recognizing that that lineup, it was only an all-men lineup who were signing agreements. If you look at the contents of some of the issues that were immediately discussed, there was nothing on the table looking at women's economic justice and women's leadership in economic empowerment and the design of that agreement. And what we are saying is, where is us? Can we be on the table to actually take and hold strong dialogues when that is happening?
Well, critical questions, heavy questions, but very, very important, and great to speak to you both. Carol Angier is Program Manager for Women's Rights and Emergencies with ActionAge, and Rachel Blaney, a member of the Canadian Parliament for the New Democratic Party. I thank you both for being with us on the Religion and Ethics Report.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
Very good to be here.